All right, welcome to the Hours. We are Scouting Coaching. I'm Tyler. This is Mark. I was actually talking with another podcast producer in a whole nother industry, but a sport industry. And they were sharing with me what they thought were like really good podcast numbers with their most successful podcast. And I'm very happy to say that what they said was their most successful podcast in the sport industry. We are nipping at the heels of that with our weekly downloads. I was very surprised. So snaps to that. If you want to know exactly what the weekly downloads are, just go and send me and Mark a DM, and we'll tell it to you. We'll tell the one person that asks what it was. But I also did notice that on a recent episode, we did offer to give away a shirt, and there were a number of comments for the shirt giveaway. And so, Mark, before we begin, let's decide who gets our shirt giveaway, because we said that the most compelling, interesting comment was going to get the shirt. Like, tell us why you deserve the shirt. So there's three finalists. You decide which of these three finalists are going to get the shirt. This was in the Culture May Not Matter episode. It was just posted at the beginning of this week. Okay, here we go. One coach. I'm not going to give you the names because you may recognize them.
Fair.
I should get a shirt. Because Jason Williams was the best NBA player never to make an all-star team. White chocolate, Williams.
Yeah.
Another coach. Y'all should give me a shirt because I would love to rep the community and get more coaches in my area to sign up for Savvy and get the Savvy mindset. Very compelling.
Very compelling. Very compelling.
I should get a shirt because I want parents to see where our culture comes from, and hopefully they can find Savvy and stop complaining so much.
A little less compelling, but compelling nonetheless.
All right. Jason Williams, so I can rep it and influence people, and so that parents can go and learn to be savvy themselves.
I am a huge white chocolate fan. I mean, he was, to me, Pistol Pete reincarnated almost. Mm-hmm. But I got to go with number two. Door number two is the most compelling to me because he wants to rep the brand. Let's be a walking billboard for Savvy. Get more coaches in. If you are a current member listening, you can use our affiliate link and you can earn money every time you refer someone. So hopefully this coach, I don't know the name, Tyler didn't show me what it
is. Coach Wicks.
Coach Wicks.
Coach Wicks. I'm messaging Coach Wicks. If you're listening, message me right now to get your mailing address.
All right. Maybe it's Sunny. Yeah. You get a shirt.
Okay. Well, tell them a little bit more about the affiliate thing real quick, because we've never really shared that.
Right. Yeah. So any member, when they log into our school platform and get all of our Savvy resources and community, there's an invite button that says invite people. And if you click that link, it's going to give you an affiliate link and you can share that with all of your friends, coaching friends in your area, not in your area, whoever you want to share that with. If they sign up using that link, you get 30% of their monthly membership or annual membership for as long as they're a member, as long as you're a member. You're going to earn monthly recurring revenue. And the goal would be to refer at least three friends and you get your membership paid for. And, I think the catch-22 in our industry is people are getting a lot of value from being a Savvy member. And some people want to hoard that for themselves. And I understand that competitive advantage there, but basketball has really grown. You have probably grown, the coach listening to this, and Tyler and I have grown from sharing with other coaches. And so I don't think that allowing other coaches in your area to have exposure to these things is a negative, because we want the game to grow. We're in this to grow the game and build our athletes. And I'll also say this, trust yourself that you will use the resources better than anybody else. So for instance, when you coach in college, everybody's film is available, right? You go on Synergy and you have everybody's film. Well, I trust that I'm going to break down the film and game plan better than everybody else, whether that's true or not. At least I internally believe that because I was talking with a high school coach and he was saying that they're mandating that you post your stats in their state. And he's like, gosh, I just don't want other coaches knowing the stats. Well, it's like, well, just trust yourself that you're going to, one, use that information more and then use it better. So affiliate link, I would invite all members to use their affiliate link, invite their best coaching friend that they lean on for advice and wisdom, and make them a Savvy member. And I think you'll both get more out of your membership having another sounding board to use Savvy methods and principles.
Yeah, well said. I'll just share, we were actually on doing live training with the coaches last night. One of the coaches in our membership made this really amazing post in our coaching community where all the resources are. We bounce ideas off each other constantly. And he shared this. And this really is the vision, the template of a savvy coach. Like, if you commit and go deeper with us, don't just listen to the podcast. I know thousands of you listen to the podcast. Hundreds of you go deeper. Be one of the hundreds. The deeper you go, the more you'll be transformed, impacted, and become the leader that you want to be and create the program that you want. Here is what this coach has done with leading his program. He wrote this post. 5 years ago, I took over a varsity girls basketball job. The program had zero state tournament berths, only nine above 500 seasons since 1970. Never had three above 500 seasons in a row. Zero youth programs, and now they've gone to nine youth programs. Only 12 players showed up for their youth camp after this first season. Now up over 35. Players weren't showing up for open gyms. Now out of their 22 players, you know, they're having 15 players show up to open gyms in the summer. He just says that his players love the savvy method. They've told him this, all of the catchy phrases and the principles. And that's how you build a program. Thank you to, you know, all the other coaches in the community. And thank you to Savvy. And I just think like that is the win. You know, the wins are following, of course, but that's the win. And if you find something that grows the game, grows players, grows participation, like Coach Rush shared, you must share it with other coaches. This is not about beating other coaches in a single game in your season. If you're coaching basketball to grow the game, to create more transformational experiences, to enhance sport and participation in your area, that's why you would share something that helps do that. If you're only caring about beating the opposing team, then Savvy's probably not for you. You should probably go find another podcast to listen to. So anyway, that's our hope. That's our dream. And hopefully that this podcast is an entry point into that. And so let's transition into today's topic. Today's topic is this: what will you make the other team show you? What will you make the opposing coach show you they can do, that they can teach, that they have prepared their team? As you're going into a game in performance mode, say, show me, coach, show me you can do this. It's our suggested game plan. So Mark, when you are preparing to coach a game, what is one of the main things in your checklist that you want the other coach to prove that he has taught his team or she has taught her team?
Yeah, before I get into my specific answer, I would want to share with coaches that these should all be part of your identity. Like, I wouldn't necessarily change these things game to game. So I'm just going to take this approach. This is any coach on our schedule. I'm going to force you to show me that you have taught transition defense, because no matter what, we're going to play fast. That was a pillar of play. That was part of our identity, that we're going to race first and race always. So I want to put pressure on your defense the second the possession changes. I'm a big believer that offense starts the second you gain possession of the ball. It doesn't start past half court. I've often said, if there wasn't a half court line in basketball, how different would the game be? Obviously, the ability to go back court would increase spacing a lot, but how would that alter a coach's mindset as far as playing in the half court or playing in the full court? Much like the three-point line, everybody shot from what is now considered mid-range because there was no incentive to shoot from further back. Well, I think if you remove that half court line, I think basketball coaches would see offense as the immediate change of possession. So I'm going to put pressure on your transition defense on every single possession.
I really like how you said, like, this isn't going to change game to game. That's a very, very important. Now, you may know from previous experience playing that coach or that team, or you may know from breaking down film, they can do this. So it just goes right through your mental checklist. You know, you may not choose not to push on that door in the game or push on that door very long, but it still is a part of your identity as a coach as you're going through your mental checklist. Okay, can we get an advantage here? Nope, they're showing this at this personnel or this film. We're just going down this checklist. It's part of your identity, even if you're not going to necessarily, you know, attack that for the entire game.
Yeah, and I'll add one thing to that is, okay, let's take the transition D. Let's say we're scouting someone and this team is, they're equipped to play transition defense. Is can they do it for 32 minutes or can they do it for 40 minutes or 48 minutes, whatever it is. Because I do think there's a certain point in the game where the dam can break, even against the good teams. And that is where you know, the 8-point lead becomes the 16-point lead, the 16-point lead becomes the 30-point lead, is because we're going to like, we're going to sneak some transition offense in. We're going to get a bucket or two every quarter. And then all of a sudden that fourth quarter, you're just mentally and physically worn down because we may play different than you and you're not used to playing that style for that long. And then the dam breaks and you get, you know, three runouts in the fourth quarter and that seals it.
Yeah, we've seen this with like really good lock left teams. First quarter, second quarter, you're having some influence, but not a lot. But then towards the end of the game, they're just exhausted of just like, I'm so frustrated. I can't get to my right hand. I feel more pressure as the game gets tight and close towards the end. And I even try to get to my right hand more, you know, and then it just breaks wide open. And I mean, some players just quit and they give up the ball. Like, I'm tired. I'm tired of this. So that is a really good point too. Like, the attrition game on many of these things is also valuable.
Yeah. What are you going to make me show you?
Show me you can handle pressure. So I would go macro on this from a development standpoint. When you start with less experienced teams and less experienced players, it is the number one thing that all opponents will make you show them. And so they should also show you this. The team that pressures often, for whatever reason, doesn't like pressure. Like, make them show you. If you don't, you know, I'm just like a pack line coach, right? I'm just a pack line coach. Okay, well then you are missing out on the first and most important foundational component of making your opponent show you they can handle pressure. Why do we not see NBA teams trapping in the full court? Because they have shown they can handle pressure. Why do we see every youth team? Why are many youth leagues not allowed to press, right? Because no youth teams can handle pressure. That is the beginning state and end state of basketball. So start at the beginning. And I think that that is something that many teams in the middle of that progression, so I'm going to say like many high school teams especially, don't actually make the opponent show. Mark, if you have a star player, I'm going to press you. Because that's one of the easiest ways to get the ball out of the star player's hands and to make them not just be able to get to their spots and do what they want. So, I mean, like, man, how do we guard this star player? How do we guard this action? The answer is pressure. And I think it's a tool that many coaches on both sides of that coin don't make the opponent show, but also don't prepare for enough themselves. You may spend a whole bunch of time on your half court offense, right? Offense. And then all of a sudden you're getting pressed and you never even get into it. You've got to show you can handle pressure first.
Yeah, agreed. And I think there's, for coaches listening, this might be a big change for you. There's different varieties of pressure. You know, I'm of the mindset that make or miss, we're picking up full court. Like, if it's man, if it's zone, doesn't really matter. I prefer to play man. So 32 minutes, 40 minutes, however long the game is, I want you to feel us. I don't want you to have half the court all to yourself, be able to get into your offense. Like you said, get the ball to your star player. Is, you know, if the goal of defense is to get the ball back, let's do it as quickly as possible instead of letting you run your stuff, set up your stuff, and then let's engage and try to get the ball back. And if you do press or apply any type of pressure and you force turnovers, in football, it's like getting a turnover in the red zone. You can turn those into points easier, faster, if you're getting turnovers in the backcourt instead of, you know, in the front court and then have to convert and all that stuff. So, yeah, agree. That one was on my list. In fact, that was the first one on my list, but I decided to go with my other one, knowing that you were probably going to have that one in yours. I didn't want to steal your.
You know what I'm going to do before I even do it.
That's right. Okay, here's mine. It's very related, and this comes from the way we're going to defend. Let's say it's in the full court, half court. I think when you apply pressure, like you said, you get to this outcome, but you can do it without picking up in the full court as well. But I'm going to make the other coach show me that their team can play conceptually. And what I mean by conceptually is, can they play the play after the play? So if you're coming down and you're like a ball screen team and we disrupt your ball screen, what now? Do you have to get it back out? Do you have to set up and get into another ball screen? Or if you're a flex team and we are disrupting your passing lanes, are you able to just to play it? And that would be, to me, you're forcing teams to go into their drive and kick game. In lock left, we say make the ball go. Like, let's not let offense like periscope, look around, find open passes. off-ball defenders should be hunting passes and taking away passing lanes. So if offensive player has the ball, I want the opposing team to think, all right, can't pass it anywhere. I don't have a shot. So my only other way to move the ball or to do something is drive it. And then we're just going to train our players. Like the number one thing that we work on is defending the drive, whether that's on the ball, how we rotate, how we close off on the backside. I found that when we made the ball go, we forced teams into their drive and kick, I could tell if we're going to win the game almost instantly. It's like if they can't play in that environment, if they rely on running their offense to score, we're going to win because we don't let anybody run their offense. Like you're not going to come down and do what you're supposed to or want to do or the way you practice. We're just not going to let you operate like that. You're going to play the game that we play. So we're going to apply pressure, whether in the half or full, make you play conceptually. The teams that could, it was like, all right, game on, let's go, may the best man win. And those were the most fun games to play in, honestly.
Yep. Okay. I knew that you were going to say that one. Heard this, which is good. I completely agree with it. Okay, let me do one that, okay, if you can guess in advance the next one that I'm going to say.
Do I get a savvy shirt?
You get a savvy shirt. What do you get?
I'm going to guess. What's that?
I said you'll get something awesome. I can't think of what it is yet.
All right, so I'm going to, because this one was almost on my list, but I cut it thinking you might do it. I'm going to guess that you're going to make the other coach show you that they can play with their left hand.
What a great and obvious guess, but incorrect. I went a little bit less obvious. I'm going to make the other coach show that they can rebound. They can rebound. I'm going to, like, they have emphasized rebounding. So I'm going to start out, and historically, this has probably been my greatest weakness. Full disclosure, I have not emphasized offensive rebounding enough. It's constantly a frustration point for me, and I realize, I shouldn't be frustrated. I am, but I shouldn't be frustrated because I have not emphasized this. And over and over and over again, I see it in games that I coach, in games that other teams are coaching. I would start by sending five to the offensive glass and make the other coach show me that they can rebound, and that they can rebound and get out and punish it. Just show me. Show me that your players can box out. Show me that your players are tougher. Show me your players are disciplined. Show me that you've emphasized rebounding. So that would be high on my list. But to do that, you can't just say in the moment. I've tried, trust me. Crash the glass. Time out. What did you do when we shot the basketball? I stood there, coach, right? Well, don't do that anymore. And nothing changes, right? So another team is making me show them that I've taught offensive rebounding and I'm failing. But like that would be an aspiration of mine and is moving forward. Even in practice last night, we spent our first 10 minutes on a prime, just focusing on attacking the glass and going and getting the basketball. Because I have not shown that myself.
I like that one. That was good. That would not have been a guess of mine. But I started as a, let's send three to the glass. Let's get a halfback and fullback back. And then we transitioned to, okay, we just got more and more aggressive, I guess. And then I went to, let's just get a halfback back. And they kind of are as deep as the deepest man. No one gets behind them. They get the half court and read. Because what I did want to do is remove two players. Once we get an offensive rebound, we're at an advantage. But we're also playing 3-on-5 at that point. So I wanted to stay 5-on-5. We tried tagging up. To be honest, I didn't do a great job of implementing tag up. There'd be times in practice where I'd go an hour. And I was like, you know what? I haven't even talked about tagging up yet. So like you, it was a weakness of mine. But I think as I coached, I just got more and more aggressive in all phases. Like, we're going to pick you up, make or miss, full court man. We're going to, put pressure on your transition defense. We weren't going to make those decisions based on opponent, but rebounding was definitely one of those things as well. We sent four to the glass every single shot. At least that was the goal. But if I was coaching right now, if I had a team, I'd send five, and you would have to prove that you could exploit sending five for us to make any type of adjustment.
So few teams exploit it. Few teams exploit it. And if you make everybody rebound, if you make all five defenders box and rebound, they're not getting out and running. I actually think the opposite is true. Like, if you send people back, they can send people out. So, I mean, I would just keep just punishing that every single time.
Yep. Make them block out. And then also, so that's going to keep them at bay, right? They can't get out and bolt, but also it's going to take up a lot of their game planning as well. Like, how much is our coach just going to harp on rebounding? And if you're harping on rebounding in practice as a coach, you usually leave practice pissed off because yes. It means your team does not rebound well enough and you know it's coming.
And it's not very fun to teach. Why do a lot of coaches look for a rebounding drill? Why do a lot of coaches, you know, get frustrated? It's because it's not what's fun to teach. Like, your offensive system and act, that's fun. So that's what coaches want to have fun. So that's why they're doing it. They don't want to sit in rebounding. I mean, the best coach I've ever observed in it is a coach by the name of Lorenzo Romar. He's been at many college jobs. University of Washington is where I watched. And, like, he just always had a great offensive rebounding team. So I went and watched some practices. They did it for an hour every practice, right? So, I mean, and he loved it. Like, he loved it. And when they got an offensive rebound, he was pumped up as opposed to angry at the defense. You know, like, that was what got him excited. So, I mean, we every human being just trends towards the things that excite them. And if rebounding excites you, you'll probably have a good rebounding team.
Coaches, if you're listening to this, you know, this one's coming out over the summer. Maybe find a coach on your staff that is a rebounding coach. I think a lot of times we look for, like, an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator. I would, if you are lacking in the rebounding department, I think what Tyler said is 100% true. Most coaches don't enjoy teaching rebounding. So we cover it maybe the first couple of days of practice and then hope that it's there and sticks and we can move on to the fun stuff. I designate a rebounding coach that they're looking at both sides of the ball in everything that you do. Here's one more practical tip for coaches. Always finish your stuff with a rebound. I never wanted to tell my teams, like, all right, we're going three trips. We're going down, back, down, or we're going down and back and then stopping, because you're losing an opportunity to rebound because they're not going to rebound through that last possession. Also, anytime you play one-on-one, like, we're going until somebody scores. Sometimes I got this from Shaka Smart. It's a great way to teach multiple efforts. Tyler and I are playing one-on-one. Doesn't matter who started on offense or defense. Let's say Tyler's on offense. I'm on defense. He shoots. He misses. I get the rebound. I'm now on offense, and I don't have to take it back. I just get it, put it back up. Just always emphasize rebounding in everything that you do, so you're always getting to that next phase of the game. If we're working half-court O, we're always transitioning from O to D and vice versa.
This is a crazy world. All the players on your team are either excellent shooters or excellent offensive rebounders. You only have five players on the floor. What's your makeup of those five players between those two prototypes?
I'd go shooters.
All five.
All five are shooters. I mean, yeah. With some hesitancy, but my thought process is, man, you could really space the floor and put pressure on defense to where you're making your first shot and you're taking the rebound out of the equation.
I like it. I'm going to go different than you. I'm going to go 2 and 3. I'm going to go 2 of my 5 are excellent shooters, and 3 of the 5 are excellent offensive rebounders.
Wait a second. I thought we were in a crazy world where it was all or nothing.
Oh, gotcha. No, it's the crazy world of all or nothing is the individual player skill set.
Got it. Okay, I thought I had that.
Shooters cannot offensive rebound. They just can't.
And we're I thought I had just 5 of each. Okay. Then I forgot what you did. You say 2 good shooters and 3
rebounders? I did. I went 2.
Okay. I'll go 3 good shooters. 3 good shooters and 2 offensive rebounders.
I know. Yeah. I'm not going to change, but yeah, I think it's right in there.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to bank on one of our shooters being able to get something. Give me some long rebounds. I want those other guys good pursuers if they're not just excellent offensive rebounders.
Yeah, and like, I feel like the closest team that I'm just seeing this is the Golden State Warriors, and they kind of oscillate between the 2 and 3, especially this season. Like, at times they would have 3 really good offensive rebounders, Draymond, Kevon Looney, and Kuminga getting after it, right, with like a Curry and Podzinski as like the shooters spacing, sometimes like Moses Moody or whatever. And then sometimes it would flip the other way where they'd have like those 3 guys, you know, Moody and Curry and Podzinski and like a Gary Payton Jr. and Draymond out there. But when they got the boards, they're just looking to kick out to the shooters right away. And like, I really liked I feel like they exemplified that offensive rebounding flow right into advantage quickly, as opposed to just dribble it out and pick it up and run your offense again.
What do you think the Warriors, or maybe even just Steph Curry, shoots? What's his percentage on an offensive rebound kick out? I mean, it's got to be like 80.
So much higher than every other shot. Yeah. It's like the most open he ever is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be like 80%.
I mean 60%?
I'm thinking more than that.
More? Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, that would be an interesting stat to try to pull.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody has that broken down. All right, I'm going to make the other coach show me that they're willing to adjust. And I think Lane Kiffin in football is really good at this. Maybe you know the basketball equivalent, but if we find something that works, we're not going to mess around with anything else. We're going to go back to the well, and we're going to force you to either get better at defending it or make an adjustment to defend it. I have found that this is actually a weakness of mine, is we'll run something like an action, or we'll get a shot off of, you know, a particular sequence. And I think I could have done a better job of like, all right, let's just recreate that. Like, let's just get to that the exact same way. And then if they start to get in a rhythm against that, well, let's get to that with a different way. Maybe some false motion, what I call movement into it, or maybe we just change who the action is run for. But yeah, just continually go back to the well and just force that other coach to say, all right, we're going to live with these consequences, or we're going to make some type of adjustment. And I think if we're talking kind of game planning here, I think the team that wins the most at the highest level is the coach that can make that third adjustment. So, you know, you play, one coach adjust, the other coach adjust. Who's going to make that next adjustment? I think if you're watching like NBA playoffs, that's what everybody is raving about. Rick Carlisle is his ability to, one, change the way that he coached to be way more conceptual. He said he's not calling plays anymore. He trusts his players to make plays. They obviously play fast, but he also, I think, is showing his ability to coach in special situations, ATOs, and just game planning in general in these playoffs.
You're way higher leverage in those situations than in just your conceptual offense and defense. Like, you're like, you can kind of set that and forget it, sit down and see what your work is. But like, impact, your highest leverage impact is going to be in special situations in games. So focus more attention on that and be less emotionally attached to, okay, you know, how are we executing our conceptual offense? How are we executing our conceptual defense? Because you're not going to be able to make significant changes to that. You can't teach new things in the game.
If I am a coach that's going to adjust, so I'm going to force you to adjust. If the other coach forces me to adjust, what I like to have in my adjustments is, can we tweak what we're already doing? So if we're running, let's say we're running lock left and we are on the right side, the free side of the floor, and we're weaking ball screens. Okay. So we're getting it to the left and we're, I don't know, switching, right? And they're like just killing us on that. Well, could we still weak it and trap it instead of just completely changing our coverage and say, okay, we're going to ice that now and do something that's completely different. If you're an ice team and you're icing and not switching, maybe you ice to a switch. So smaller tweaks, but you're still adjusting and taking away the way that they're creating the advantage.
Which is how we've designed the lock left. Exactly. Right. And Mark faults to aggressive. And so what would that look like in that? It would probably be blitzing or trapping. Like, that's going to be the aggressive. So I really think that if you can apply your persona to every decision, it's going to help your players get into the mindset or the identity that you're attempting to create. What are some small questions that you would ask? Let me give my first one. I would ask the other coach if they could show that they don't foul. Can you show me that you have good foul discipline? How do we do that? It falls to aggressive. Like, we are going to get into your bodies. We're going to drive. We're going to hunt nines and eights. We're going to play off 2 feet. We're going to seek contact against man zone, especially if you're pressuring us. Show me you can't foul. Right, rebound pressure, everything. Show me that you can't foul. We're going to seek fouls first.
I got two in mind here. Let me go with this one because this is an applicable one that really is what I used when I was coaching. Is I wanted the other coach to show me that they were going to either allow or not allow our entry pass into Rose series, because that was the number one way that we could be disruptive. Is like, we're just not going to let you get into your 11-second game. We're going to force you to do something else. So as I was scouting, one thing that was on my checklist was always, do they allow the guard-to-guard pass to start a possession? We knew we were able to get into our stuff and at least crack the shell in that first action.
Here's the second one. Show me your shot discipline. Show me your shot discipline. Like, show me that you are unwilling to take contested mid-range shots. We're gonna give those to you. Show me you're willing to turn those down early. Show me you're willing to stop and kick out on a highly contested drive into bodies and not throw up that floater, that highly contested running left-hand layup. Show me your shot discipline.
Yeah. All right, here's mine. Show me that you are where you're going to help from. So one thing that we always looked at, scouting or just that always just stood out to us, we put so much pressure on the rim through drive and kick, is if teams helped off the ball side corner. When teams helped off the ball side corner, I felt like we could just kind of take a sigh of relief, and it's like, we're going to get a lot of sevens. You know, like we're going to get a nine hunt. They're going to help off ball side corner. We're shooting catch and shoot corner threes. So that just kind of was something that we were always looking at. And to be honest, we were really, really excited if you helped off ball side corners.
Yeah, which is a very common response to lock left. If you're running the lock left defense, a good opposing coach will throw their best shooter in the left corner and be like, hey, you're going to throw the ball, drive there. Show me that you're not going to help off that shooter, you know, which is our second layer of, you know, gapping and skirmishing and how we don't help, we fake help. But a lot of early lock left teams will sit so heavy in that gap because they haven't taught how to play the gap yet that they give up a bunch of sevens in that corner to good shooters. So that's a really good one. Okay, gosh, I got two more and we got to get out of here. All right, let me give one of my two and we'll save the next one for a future one. Show me your back cut. Show me you're going to back cut us and can make that pass. Just show me. So what that means is we play so heavy in passing lanes that we want to see, like, yeah, like what do most opposing teams do when they're denied? Stand there. Like the offense just stands there. They don't even back cut.
Yeah, they don't even stand there. They creep out to half court. Like, me, give me the ball.
Yes, exactly. So show me that you've taught back cut, which is like, I haven't seen it. I just haven't seen a team that's excellent about burning the moment they're not open. So I think that that's a really, really key one. And we miss out so much defensively if we just allow them to catch open on the perimeter and we don't contest that pass. Any final ones, Mark?
Well, I was going to say, going through our player development course, you presented on Goldilocks passes. And it's like if we're trying to get Goldilocks, you know, passes that are just right, like on time, on target, then we should disrupt those. One final thought. If you're a coach that hasn't fully adopted lock left or an aggressive defensive system, I'd challenge you to at least take away what's called igniters, like passes where they want them. You know, like I'm going to enter the ball into the wing so we can get into this action. Take that away. So if it's an on-time, on-target pass, what I would look for is that they're getting their catch off their spot. So you're disrupting their spacing, or they're getting their catch with their back to the basket. So they're going away from the basket on every catch.
And this one was jam-packed with applicable nuggets for you and your team. I'm pumped about this one. I'm excited for it to get out. Mark, thanks for your time, everybody. I'm Tyler. That's Mark. We're Savvy Coaching. Check us out at SavvyCoach.com. Until next time, stay savvy.
Stay savvy. Thanks for listening.